This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're going over Inventing the Christmas Prince. Yay! So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one and we will catch you next time. And, additional disclaimer, you may not want us to ruin it for your kids because we will be discussing Santa Claus and how parents discuss him with their children. Are you ready for one dry kiss? For One Dry Kiss.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms. We're in the month of chinka-chinka-chinka-chinka, November and December.
November.
It's a twofer. We are doing Christmas movies. Today we are doing the 2022 Hallmark original movie, Inventing the Christmas Prince, with Tamara Maury Housley, and I am here with my co-host, who is not a Tamara, but a Tamara. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Miss Tamara Cosio. Yeah.
I was going to say, how dare you introduce her before me? Hello, who's the co-host on this show with you, Tamara or Tamara? I gave you two guesses. You better get it right the first time.
You know, she does live closer to me, so I'm guessing Tamara. Oh, did I get it wrong?
Again? Or was that what we're doing? We bring that up again every time. Every time. Especially closer to the holidays, you get more intense in how far away we live from each other.
It's not my fault that you moved away. I've been here all along.
I couldn't find a job. I don't want to live on your couch forever. I love you and I wanted to stay that way.
Oh, my couch is so cozy. Plus, I have Stitch for you to snuggle with. I mean, you need not go any further.
True. Fair, but there was a time where you did not have a couch at all, so.
Yeah, but I got one for you. Just for you.
Oh, yeah. Those chairs sucked. And I am here with my co-host, Corinne, who loves me enough to buy me a couch so I can be comfortable at her house.
Yes.
Corinne Corinetti.
Thank you.
I thank you. IKEA thanks you. Thank you. I had a completely different idea of what this movie was because I've never seen it before yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good one, personally.
Well, it's totally up your alley. This is a Corinne-centric movie, I would say.
Okay, I'm curious. What makes it a Corinne-centric movie?
First and foremost, it has Christmas in it. Secondly, it's got a lot of magic in it.
Yeah, Christmas magic.
See, there's
we
a
like
little
Christmas magic.
Girl that, yes, kids you like with the magical wonder that a child brings into the story.
Hey, this is a good child actor.
Oh my God, she's so freaking adorable.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
There are some stinker child actors in some of the Hallmark movies.
Yes, this was not one of them. Oh, she's talking. I was like, oh my God, I just want to squeeze you. I just want to squeeze your cheeks. So yeah, she was a positive in this movie.
Yeah.
What else makes a Corinne-centric movie? Christmas, kids, wonder, magic, real snow? Was there real snow in this?
I would say that I don't know if there was or not, but it wasn't horribly bad fake snow.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't CGI snow or asbestos snow or packing peanuts foam snow or a combination of the three.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to, Corinne? Anything new to report lately in your life?
Yeah.
What about that show you've been watching on Apple?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, you mean the one that made me lose my shit and cry for a good half an evening? That show?
No, that's not what I'm talking about at all.
Oh, okay. It's so good. I told you that I was watching this show and I lost it. It is Lessons in Chemistry that stars Brie Larson. And you were like, oh, yeah, I knew about that all along. And I was like, and you didn't tell me about it? And you're like, I've also read the book, Hair Flip, Hair Flip. Kristen from Let's Go to Cart recommended it, Hair Flip, Hair Flip. And I was like, thank you for holding out on me, ?
Fuck right off with me. I didn't. Okay, look, Kristen, yes, she did recommend it, but we had the same opinion about the book because the book looks so cliche and weird. The cover is cliche and weird.
Yeah, it is. It
doesn't at all portray what's inside and the story. And so when she said that, she's like, oh, because I saw it on Audible. It was available. And I'm like, oh, the story sounds kind of interesting, but the cover's kind of throwing me off.
Cover makes it look like it's some kind of cheesy romance book.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it actually was very enjoyable. And then when I saw that they had a series on Apple, like, I lost my shit. And then you said you were watching it and I lost my shit.
And I literally lost my shit watching it, sobbing during a particularly poignant part of it. So
thank God I thought you were going the other direction.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Kept all of that under control. No Bed Bath & Beyond begs necessary. I do have an embarrassing, just like Kristen from Let's Go to Court, I do have an embarrassing shit story. But, you know, I have yet to reveal that to the world. So.
I know. I told you my pee on myself story and you're holding back. Corinne, we have a vast, wide audience out there of gentle listeners who's dying to know, where did you shit?
Oh, my God. Maybe if we reach like 500 reviews or something, I will. I will share the story.
Oh, you're whoring your shit story out for reviews. I appreciate that. And I wish I would have thought to do the same. Because my story was embarrassing and pretty epic all at the same time. Yeah. Nothing I love more than a messing on yourself story. Keeps things light and fresh. Or not so fresh.
Not so fresh. Anything going on in your world, Miss Tamara?
What's going on with me? Well, outside of podcasts and movies and TV shows that I can't remember what the hell I wanted to plug, Larry and I, later this week, are going on a date night. Ooh. He is taking me to Astra Lumina.
Oh my God! Really? You went there?
Which is supposedly an enchanted night walk amongst the stars, yes.
Am I invited? Because I want to go to this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
He told me like the other day, it was so funny because he was just like on his computer quietly and then he just like turned his screen around. He's like, hey, do you like this? I'm like, oh yeah, that looks cool. He goes, okay. And then today he's like, yeah, we're going this weekend. And I'm like, wait, what? Huh? He's like, you're welcome. He's like, I was trying to surprise you and I'm trying to do like interesting things that I think that you would like as a surprise, you know? So I was like, oh no, this is good. I felt bad because
that's like a super good one.
Yeah, my knee-jerk reaction was like, what?
It has all these like really interesting light installations in it. It's supposed to be really magical. And that's so exciting that he, of his own volition, decided to do that with you.
Yes. And we're also going to be spending the holidays with his aunt. We're going to be making Thanksgiving dinner with her. It's going to be so much fun because it's going to be Larry and his family. And his aunt is a Jehovah's Witness, so they don't normally celebrate Thanksgiving. Uh-huh. So it's kind of like an exception where they just happen to be cooking all the Thanksgiving things on Thanksgiving Day, I guess. We're going to be celebrating it at her house. She's not, but she'll be there. And like, I love his aunt Tat, so I'm really excited about that too. And his kiddos will be there.
And Thanksgiving is, it's not like Christmas or anything like that. It's just a gathering of family around food. So.
Yes.
And Jehovah's Witnesses do gather family around food.
They do. And we both agreed to go off our diets that day. So we're going to have like three types of potatoes, mashed, scalloped, and another one that's not yet named that I will decide a couple of days beforehand. I love me some potatoes.
Potatoes are delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tam, yes. Do you have a synopsis for us?
I do, especially because you put in big, bold letters, Tamara, please titillate us with a tiny version of Inventing the Christmas Prince. Thank you for the reminder, Corinne.
You're welcome.
And synopsis, Inventing the Christmas Prince, the travel-sized edition, deep in the heart of Hallmark Town. A rocket scientist named Shelby, who didn't have a last name in IMDb, which I was like, Shelby, what's her last name? Shelby, no last name given. Played by Tamara Mowry Housley, is struggling to be a good single parent to her adorable daughter, Grace, played beautifully by Isabel Birch. Every holiday season, Shelby tells her daughter about the Christmas prince. I'm not going to tell you much about him because Corinne will be singing his praises in just a few moments. I'll only say he's magical, he can grant wishes, and has a birthmark on his hand where Rudolph the reindeer kissed him.
Ah,
the prince is, dare I say it, more magical than Santa? Question mark? And bonus in the story, we also have a Grinch of sorts. His name is Evan, played by Ronnie Rowe. He's Shelby's boss, and he doesn't give a damn about work-life balance, even going so far as making his employees work on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Anywho, in a strange twist of events, little Grace, no last name given, sees Evan and the curious coincidental birthmark on his hand and mistakes him for the Christmas prince. She's smitten and wants to spend every moment with him so he can grant all of her Christmas wishes. This forces Shelby and Evan to join together to try and keep Grace's magical Christmas alive. Will Grace get her heart broken when she finds out that Evan's birthmark is actually a scar he got in college when he was overzealously washing his bong? Will Shelby dangle her daughter's belief in front of Evan, causing him to do more and more ridiculous things, then skip town for a better job in California?
Ooh.
Keep those listening ears listening as we find out who exactly is inventing the Christmas prince.
Nice.
Thank you. Well, since we got the travel size version out of the way, Corinne, are you ready for the full size candy bar version of the movie?
Oh, yeah. Shelby, played by Tamara Mori Housley, tells a story to a room full of mostly captivated 7-year-olds. And can I tell you, she does such a good job storytelling this. I'm like, really? Oh, really? Oh, really?
And through, didn't even realize you were supposed to be outlining the movie. You're like, oh shit, God, rewind.
Tell me more about the Christmas prince. And every time I paused the movie, her facial reactions were like pitch perfect to what was going on. It was just,
Tamara. Okay, well, I hate her a little bit because every time I pause a video on me, I always look like I'm in the middle of a sneeze or somebody stuck their finger up my back end.
Yeah, no, she just looks like she has, you know, these levels of irritation that are like subtly express on her face as she's interacting with Evan.
No, she's a professional. That's why she's a professional.
She brought it to this role. So anyways, far, far away at the very top of the North Pole, right next to Santa's village, lives a very special man. His name is the Christmas Prince, the magical ruler of the North Pole. Every day, the Christmas Prince tours the North Pole, granting wishes to the reindeer, elves, and even Santa and Mrs. Claus. At the end of the day, he goes home to his palace to make hot chocolate with peppermint sticks for Christmas tree, not Christmas tea. Christmas tea. I was like, for Christmas tree? Okay, I mean, he is like Christmas prince.
The Christmas trees.
Yeah, you know. He can do what he wants. No, he did not make hot chocolate with a peppermint stick for a Christmas tree. He did it for Christmas tea.
Mm.
Yes, makes more sense. In his royal dining room with Santa, Mrs. Claus, and all the elves to thank them for all their hard work. And after the cocoa party, he hooks up his beautiful white horse Snowball to his carriage and takes everyone for rides around Santa's village. Shelby's audience is entranced, except for one very dubious boy whose face says bullshit.
I kind of agree with him, because if you have Santa's sleigh and reindeers that can fly up in the sky, are you really going to be that jazzed about a horse-ridden carriage through the village and just asking for a friend?
I mean, I would love to go on a horse-drawn carriage ride through Santa's village personally, so I'm just saying. Okay. Sounds a lot cozier than like flying through the icy, icy air.
But still, the thrill of it. That's probably where we differ.
Mm-hmm.
Amongst the many, many things we differ on. I want a sleigh ride up in the sky. You want a horse-drawn carriage ride warm on the ground through the snow.
With a hunky Christmas prince? Hell yeah, you can have the old man Santa. He's all yours.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Does he have to be there, though? Does Santa have to be there? I don't think he has to be there. I could just tell me how to ride this baby, and I'll just go up on my own.
Oh, okay. Well, then, in which case, I would definitely want to ride with you, because I think that we would get into a lot of good trouble.
Mm.
Anyway, Snowball is very special. Everybody wants a ride on Snowball's carriage. Thank you very much. And Shelby continues. Santa respected the Christmas prince so much that he gave him the job of finding one boy or one girl during the Christmas season. No, no, gentle listeners. Mm. No one is getting kidnapped. This is not a Lifetime movie.
I was going to say.
And that boy or girl gets to be the Christmas prince's king or queen, and they get 12 wishes, one for each day leading up to Christmas. Bullshit boy interrupts. My mom and dad never mentioned him before. And Shelby responds unfazed. Not everybody knows about the Christmas prince, just my family. My dad told me about him, and my dad's dad told him. Classroom teacher interrupts, saying that story time is done and that Shelby needs to get to work. Shelby's daughter, Grace, proudly says to the classroom, my mom builds rockets so they can answer all the questions of the universe. And I would like to take a moment to say this is the second time she has played a scientist chick in a Hallmark movie, because when we did Christmas Comes Twice, she played an astronomer.
I respect that, but I have something to say about it a little bit later.
Oh, okay.
Not negative per se. It's just an interesting choice for a Hallmark movie for one specific reason, which I will reveal later on.
Ooh. I'm getting a surprise gift just like the Christmas prince. I'm so excited.
And why didn't they give the Christmas prince a name? He should have a name. There's the Grinch, there's Rudolph, there's...
He does. It's the Christmas prince.
Oh, so the first name Christmas, middle name prince, last name?
Jinga, 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 jinga.
You can't just make jinga, jinga, jinga and everything makes sense, Corinne.
Yes, yes, I can. And yes, it will.
Okay, fine. Then let me jinga, jinga, jinga go on to the next section. Next, we see Shelby rushing to work at Satellite Boost Lab, the most festive fucking lab you've ever seen in your life.
Seriously.
I'm seriously surprised that they don't have lights strung around the rocket as it went into the air.
But it was green and did have, like, you know, it did look kind of like a Christmas tree.
Yes. I was like, seriously, I've seen pictures of the NASA control room and it looks nothing like this place.
No.
But, you know, times are changing. So, you know, maybe they've evolved. Everyone cheers as the rocket ascends, their project taking off that was 7 years in the making. They're drinking champagne, and Shelby and Lorenzo, her work bestie, clink glasses triumphantly. Everyone is jubilant until, as Lorenzo puts it, our fearless leader, Dr. Spock, aka the worst director in history, enters the room. Shelby and Lorenzo give him a little side eye from their cubicles, and Lorenzo confesses, I still don't think he knows my first name. Shelby scoffs, you've been here for 4 years. How is that even possible? He says, same way he doesn't know that you're a single mom. Mm. Shelby marvels, I'm impressed with how oblivious he is. And across the room, Dr. Spock, aka Evan, talks with his boss man, Scott. Scott congratulates him on the launch.
No, the rocket ship did not go out for cigarettes.
Shut up. You throw me off a game like that. Back to the story. Scott wastes no time breaking the news to him that the board is concerned about Evan's management skills. He's lost 3 key employees over the past 6 months, all of whom stated that Evan was the reason they were leaving in all of their exit interviews. Scott breaks it down for Evan. We need everyone we have for the deployment of the solar array. Whatever that means. Evan sits behind his desk, his pocket protector prominently displayed because that's the symbol for smartness. Corinne?
Yes?
Have you ever used a pocket protector in your life?
Hell no. But I know people who have.
Yeah.
I've worked with people who have worn them.
I haven't worn one. I have worked with people that have worn them too, but I guess we weren't destined for pocket protecting greatness like Evan. Mm-hmm. Evan assures Scott, I know if we don't make deadline, we'll lose millions of dollars. I get it. I'll make sure everyone puts in overtime. Scott shakes his head. Don't push so hard. If you lose any more employees, you're headed for review. I love the fact that you don't have a life, but you need to remember that your employees do. Mm-hmm. Evan looks shocked and stiffly says, okay. As Scott heads out of the office, having done his job, and is now probably headed to the pickleball courts for the rest of the day.
As upper management is wont to do. Oh, I've done my, like, 2 things that I need to do today. Now it's time to hit the golf courses. But, like, since it's winter time, pickleball, obviously.
this management department is fucked. They are seriously fucked. They're seriously fucked up. I can't believe how things end. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay. Interesting. That evening, as Shelby and Grace are decorating their Balsam Hill TM tree with Balsam Hill TM ornaments.
That makes you sound about as spicy as some eggnog, Corinne.
I just upped the hotness of this Hallmark movie by 50%. Grace tells her mom, Sherman, aka Bullshit Boy, doesn't think the Christmas Prince is real. Shelby scoffs. Well, Sherman doesn't know everything. They head upstairs and Grace gets tucked into her beautiful canopied bed.
Oh my God, I thought the same fucking thing. I saw that and I was like, dream bed, dream bed. It's got like the gauzy white over it and twinkle lights on top of it.
Yes.
So you can just see it through the fabric. It was phenomenal. I would have killed to have that bed if I was six.
Oh, so good. It's a beautiful bed. And it was perfect for Grace, the cutest little girl in the whole world. Thank you very much. Who does such a great job acting in this stinking movie, I've got to say. Who they chose as a child in this role would make or break this movie. And she made it.
She carries it well. But I'm gonna counter that many a child have messed up many a movie and that the movie just was fine, but they were just like, damn, that kid just messed. I'm not going to name movies.
No. We're not interested. Look, children are learning. Not all of them, you know, can initially go into the acting mode. A lot of them need some more experience under their belt. We're not interested in breaking down children. I'm just pointing out that she's a good one.
A lot of them don't need their moms pushing them into their career because they want to live vicariously through them.
Oh, hell yes. I agree. I completely agree with that as well.
See Jeanette McCurdy's book, I'm Glad My Mom Is Dead.
And I say that the child in this movie would either make or break the movie because the child needed to be convincing that they saw the Christmas Prince and they recognized the Christmas Prince for who they were. Mm. So Grace asks, is the Christmas Prince real? And her mom assures her, he is if you believe in him. Grace likes this response and asks, well, how will I know him if I see him? Shelby responds, he's tall, dark, and handsome, and on his hand he has a mark on it from when Rudolph kissed him when he was a baby. Grace likes this answer, and Shelby finishes the conversation by asking, okay, are you snug as a bug? Grace smiles, yep, and then asks, one kiss? Shelby leans over and gives Grace an exaggerated kiss on the forehead. Mwah! Grace asks, two kiss? Shelby goes in, mwah, mwah. Three kiss? Mwah, mwah, mwah. Grace finishes, and Shelby continues, last kiss, she says softly, giving Shelby a final kiss on the forehead and leaving the room with a final, sleep tight, love bug. As soon as she's gone, Grace looks out her window and says, Christmas Prince, it's me, Grace. I've had a hard year. Sherman picks on me and I really miss my daddy. Can you make me queen this year, please? She lays back down and closes her eyes so she doesn't see a singular star glow up bigger in a wish-granted kind of way. Jinga, 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 jinga. The next day, Shelby's friend Nicole from
So you're saying if we really believe in the Christmas Prince, he's really alive?
Yes, just like Santa.
So if we believe in... Okay. Then I believe in a million listens on this podcast. I believe that someday, too, I will be a homeowner. And I believe that Melody will transcend time and live 10 more years, but stop peeing on everything.
Okay, you had me until your Melody wish. And then I was like, that may be a little harder to achieve.
Yes. That's why if I really believe, Corinne, according to the Christmas Prince.
And the Secret.
This is all going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next day, Shelby's friend Nicole from her parenting support group meets Shelby in the lobby of her workplace. Nicole has picked up her own daughter, Jessie, and also Grace from school and brought Grace over to her mom's work because she's an awesome friend.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Nicole tells Shelby in hushed tones that Grace is a little upset when we picked her up because the annual Christmas dance where kids bring their whole family is happening. Nicole says, my brother offered to go, so it's not going to be that bad for us. And Shelby responds, yeah, sometimes I wonder why I moved away from my family. Nicole responds, hey, you've got me and the entire support group. What more could a girl want? And Shelby thinks,
Dick.
Yeah, exactly. Dick. A husband who is alive would be nice. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody to keep you warm at night, perhaps?
But she doesn't say that.
No.
Because it's a Hallmark movie. Mm. Shelby thanks Nicole for the pickup and they part ways, agreeing to meet later that evening at Nicole's place to wrap toys for the toy drive. Shelby brings Grace upstairs, setting her up at the break room table and telling her, now remember, my boss is a bit of a grumpus, so you need to stay in here and play on your iPad, okay? Grace says she'll stay put and she's all set up. Shelby heads back to her cube to work.
A little while later, Evan comes out and starts talking to everyone on his team. Lorenzo whispers to Shelby, he's going to tell us we need to work Christmas. And I'm curious, like, what is the nature of Shelby and Lorenzo's relationship? And why aren't they together? Because they seem to get along like gangbusters.
Well, one, she's his boss. So
he's just kissing ass.
No, they're work besties. Men and women can be friends with each other.
I know, but it's just like they get along so well. And I was like, is he like the gay bestie or the brotherly type? Like, it just, he's placed there in an area, usually in Hallmark movies, where he might be the love interest, but then it detours to the other, like, boss guy who's also Shelby's boss.
Yeah.
So I'm just putting that out there.
Yes.
But it's just because he keeps popping up and he's just like whispering in her ear and they like are best friends. And they don't ever get together or have any interest in each other. And I was just curious.
Because they're work besties. Just like Adolfo and I are work besties.
See, but you guys don't live in the Hallmark world. Because in the Hallmark world, work besties equal love interest down the line. He's either got to be a work bestie, someone she hated when she was a kid. I can't think of the other tropes right now, damn it.
Work besties also equal exposition friend. And that's what he is. He's an exposition friend.
Okay.
He also has a slightly more, he's better written than some of the exposition friends, aka the Christmas cottage where she's there for her bestie's wedding ostensibly, but her bestie who's getting married only cares about what's going on with her and not actually the wedding itself. Yeah. So
you're probably right. He's just too well written. He's too involved and an actual concrete solid person that has dimensions that I'm like, what's his story?
Yeah.
What's he doing here? Why is he in the room? Okay, I gotcha. Shelby hisses back at Lorenzo. Even he wouldn't do that. Evan talks about the big project they have coming up and Shelby squinches her eyes closed, whispering on her breath. No, don't say it. Evan says, to hit our next target because we're understaffed. Shelby squints her eyes and hisses even harder. He better not mention Christmas. Evan continues, so everyone should expect to work a full day Christmas Eve and, if necessary, a half day on Christmas. Shelby springs from her seat. Are you crazy? Lorenzo tries to smooth things over. She doesn't mean that. And Evan looks shocked. But Shelby truly has no fucks to give. And says, no, that's exactly what I mean. People have families and lives. Lorenzo continues to try to placate Shelby in a way that I'm pretty sure would escalate things with Tamara. Corinne, you're spot on. Because he says, and I quote, in the spirit of the holidays, let's all take a deep breath. Fuck right off, Lorenzo. That's probably why you and Shelby aren't together. Because you say stupid shit like that. But he's cut off by Evan chiming in and saying, and just be happy. Thank you all for your understanding and listening. Merry Christmas. And then he hustles out of there, trying to get back to his office quickly like his ass is on fire. But Shelby calls after him. Is that it? You're just leaving? Evan tries to remind her how vitally important their work is, and Shelby doubles down. Yes, that's why I work weekends and nights and more holidays than I care to remember. Evan says, great. Then you should understand, and if you don't like it, well, then you can just... Shelby interrupts. Quit? And Evan huffs. Well, yes, if you insist on being so inflexible. Shelby scoffs. Inflexible? I'm the one who's inflexible? I'm done. She confronts him further by saying, you're the one with the Merry Christmas. You have to work on Christmas because you're such a rockin' engineer speech. You're the reason everyone is leaving. Evan looks around self-consciously as Shelby piles coffee mugs and a potted plant into her arms, shouting around the office, box! I need a box! Does anybody have a box? Lorenzo, not wanting to be left with Evan alone, working without his work bestie, begs, Shelby, please don't go, as a neighboring coworker brings her a box. Shelby gratefully releases her armful of stuff into it, and Evan hisses at her, you're making a scene! She whispers back, I realize that. And then with the timing only a child has, Grace enters, saying to her mom, my iPad isn't working. Shelby tells her, gather up your stuff, we're leaving. But Grace has other things on her mind. As she looks over at the man, Evan, standing next to Shelby's desk, she sees his hand has a mark on it and enthusiastically hugs Evan, exclaiming, you came, you came! Evan reacts as Evan does, trying to back away in surprise and exclaiming, But Grace is oblivious. I knew you'd come, Shelby tells her daughter. Grace, stop hugging the nice man. He's not a nice man, Shelby, don't lie. And Grace stops hugging him but says, he's not a nice man. He's the Christmas prince. Shelby clarifies, he's not the Christmas prince. He's my boss. But Grace is sure and whispers to her mom, look, he has a reindeer kiss mark on his hand. Shelby looks at Evan's hand in horror and sees the mark Grace is talking about. And Grace is thrilled. You were right, Mom. This is going to be the best Christmas ever. And honestly, that birthmark from Rudolph sounds more like a reindeer bite because I don't see how it would stay on his skin this long. Corinne, thoughts?
It's a little burn mark from his nose. Boop, boop.
Oh, that's still troubling. It's not a bite, it's a singe.
Yes, it's a singe.
That's way more magical.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't you seen the movie Branded by Rudolph? Oh yeah.
I have not. Do I want to see it? Probably not.
That evening, Evan's sister, Annalise, is over at the house helping him decorate for Christmas. Thank goodness for IMDb because I don't think we hear her name once throughout this entire movie. And yet there is a name in IMDb for her.
See, this is a fucking name debacle because I'm like, what's Shelby's last name? No name given. Okay. Yeah. Same with Grace.
Yeah.
Same with Evan. They're just first name only. Don't need a second. Correct. Or a first in Annalise's case.
That evening, Evan's sister Annalise is over at his house helping him decorate with
Balsam Hill TM.
Ooh, yes, ornaments. Thank you. Thanks for the assist, Tamara. I appreciated that.
Not a problem.
And she tells him that he needs to talk to Shelby and butter her up so she won't quit. Evan argues she's already quit. Annalise says, yeah, but does your boss know? Evan admits, no. So, she says, great, then change her mind before your boss finds out or you get canned. Figure it out. Evan says, it's probably too late anyways. She probably had everything all worked out. No one quits without a backup plan. Oh, Evan, you beautiful butterfly. No one quits without a backup plan. Evan, I've quit without a backup plan. More times than once. When I felt pushed. Oh, yes. Annalise says, you'd be surprised. And I'm like, Annalise, you and I are on the same page. Yep. We cut to Shelby sitting around a table with her support group ladies as they wrap presents for the toy drive. Shelby confesses, I don't know what I'm going to do. I made a fool out of myself in front of my team, and now I don't have a job during the holidays because... Gentle listener, she did not have a backup plan, just like I did not have a backup plan, just like Annalise suspected that she didn't have a backup plan. She's like, I know that my brother can be obtuse and not see things in a particular way. And so, yeah, I can imagine people would be driven to this every once in a while. So one of Shelby's friends asks, what about that job you applied to at Skyrocket? Shelby informs, yeah, it's my dream job, but I don't expect to get it. Skyrocket is in California, and landing that kind of job is next to impossible. Plus, Grace has a hard time changing schools in the same district. Forget about going across the country. Nicole says, okay, let's remember our number one rule. And the table chants, one thing at a time. And Nicole says, yes. Now, what are you going to do about the whole Christmas Prince thing? Shelby responds, well, I know one thing I'm not going to do. Ask my boss to be the Christmas Prince. Nicole ponders this and says, why not? And Shelby says he'd never go for it. Nicole jokingly says, but what if you blackmail him? Another mom at the table says, nailed it. And Shelby's brain hamster, which had been churning away on the wheel, suddenly comes to a screeching halt of realization. Wait a minute. I think I can blackmail him. That may just work.
I'm super glad and happy for her blackmailing scheme, but unlike you, Corinne, where she had that whole, like, I'm gonna quit without a backup plan, I was concerned because you're quitting your job as a rocket engineer, and if you don't want to move your kid around all over the country to find a new job, where are you gonna go? Is this like the rocket engineering town in the Hallmark universe? Like, is there just like a rocket factory on every corner or something? Like how Detroit was the car capital of the world. Like this little Hallmark Glen's got multiple rocket shops.
You know, I think that you just, you go to the Rocketporium and you just shop around and figure out which Rockettopia you want to work in.
Right. Because there's so many.
Yes.
And mind you, it was snowing and pretty cold in this little hamlet.
Yes.
Whereas the launch pads and the places that I am familiar with in this world, they're usually in warm places like Florida or Texas.
Yes.
So the fact that this Rocketopia would be in a cold, snowy place is surprising, a little surprising.
That's where they do their research. And then, you know, but the launching happens in Florida and whatnot.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So next thing we know, Evan is sitting in his office saying to Shelby, are you blackmailing me? Shelby, knowing that he can't afford to lose more employees, responds, it's more like a symbiotic bargain. I won't quit if you play the role of the Christmas Prince. Evan responds, who is magical and grants every wish your daughter comes up with? Shelby nods, pretty much. Evan tries countering by offering to hire somebody to do it. As he explains, I'm not good with kids. I wasn't good at being a kid myself. But Shelby insists, pointing to his hand. It's because you have that on your hand. Evan asks, my bong scar?
Oh!
He says, my birthmark? And Shelby explains, it's the mark that Rudolph left when he kissed the baby prince. Evan scoffs, this is ridiculous. I don't understand why parents... Shelby cuts him off. You don't have to understand. Do you want the deal or not? Do you really want to gamble on losing another employee right now? Evan looks at her, knowing that he doesn't have much of a choice. I was just thinking, like, at the end of that, I'm like, Shelby might be super smart, but she might not be super imaginative, because it really sounds like a better deal if he hires somebody that's more Christmas spirity to, like, come across Grace's path with like an even more pronounced mark on his hand and be like, I'm the Christmas Prince. That man's an imposter. That's why he's such an asshole.
No, but
don't you think?
No, because, you know, when you're a kid and you see somebody a certain way, you're not going to accept an imposter. She knows who the Christmas Prince is. She's not going to accept imposter prince number 327. Even if he's like, you don't have to be beautiful to turn me on.
That's the wrong prince, Corinne. That's the wrong prince. He is not allowed in this children's movie. R.I.P. R.I.P. Later, when Shelby is filling in Nicole about the situation while her kids and Sherman play in the yard, Shelby is having regrets. 12 wishes is a daunting number, and she's not sure how she's going to make this work. Shelby says, I'll just have a talk with Grace. Maybe I can get her down to 2 wishes. But their conversation is interrupted by 3 kids squabbling. Sherman declares, there's no way the Christmas Prince is real, and you'll probably ask for easy wishes so your mom can make them come true. Grace counters, nuh-uh, want to see my list? She pulls out her list out of her pocket, handing it to Sherman as Shelby looks on in horror, because Sherman reads the list and exclaims, wow, you're getting a pony that'll live in your closet? Grace nods confidently, and Shelby and Nicole look at each other with oh, shit looks.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, shit is right. Oh, Sherman. The next day at work, Shelby fills in Lorenzo on the whole Sherman/Grace situation as they sit at the break room, and Lorenzo's impressed at Grace's wish list. Shelby says, "The pony is the least of my concerns," she whispers at Lorenzo. "Evan is going to be the Christmas prince." Lorenzo looks at her seriously. "Yep, the pony is the least of your concerns." Gentle listeners, I'm guessing that Evan is on the autism spectrum and has always had a hard time fitting in and reading people. And this is definitely a big stretch for him.
If that's the case, I mean, he's got his bomb-ass sister, Annalise, that seems to be close to him and rooting for him and on his team.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, wouldn't he kind of get better with his sister's help in coaching versus, you know, a random stranger with a kid? That's one thing where I was kind of like, I completely agree with you on the spectrum part, but I was just like, he's got people in his corner that are willing to help him on that.
Well, sure. But sometimes not everyone is the best person to help you see things. Just like I'm not always the best person to explain something to you, even though I may know like X, Y, and Z, it's better coming from somebody else, you know.
What?
I know, shocking, right? Yeah, I just think, you know, different people bring different things to the table. And I do think that Annalise has helped him consistently throughout the ages. But I think that throughout this movie, I see different ways that Shelby is able to kind of explain things to him in a way that he starts understanding some more nuances that he just wasn't getting before.
Right. Because Annalise saying, "Stop being a dick to your employees or they're going to leave," is just too vague.
It's not too vague, but it's like, well, how do I stop being a dick to my employees so that they don't leave? And like, what's in it for me?
A, don't make them work at Christmas. B, don't make them work at Christmas Eve.
But why not? It doesn't even make sense because they're supposed to be there for the job.
Evan, you realize there is something out there that is called Christmas where people enjoy being with their family and friends and not at work? You are aware that that exists, right?
Yes, that's why I gave them half the day, so that they can still enjoy Christmas with their family.
Oh, you mother... Okay, Evan. I don't want to talk to you no more.
Yeah, exactly. I understand, Evan. I'm like, I have had very Evan-feeling moments throughout my life.
Yeah, that's like why I have a little bit of a hard time with this, because it's just like the transformation in the weeks, the 12 days time or however long they're together. I'm just like, okay, sure.
Evan walks by Lorenzo and Shelby to get coffee and says, "Good morning." Shelby responds, "Yes, it is." And Lorenzo states, "Good chat, gotta work," and ditches Shelby at the table. If Lorenzo had been a car, he would have left a smoking rubber trail with the swiftness he left the room.
Indeed.
But I would have been there like with my pocket popcorn being like, what's going to happen next?
I know. I'd be out of earshot. So you can't talk to me and I don't have to respond to you, but I'm going to be over here where I can hear everything.
Shelby uses the opportunity of the both of them being alone to invite Evan out for a real cup of coffee outside of the office. He consents, and after they get their delicious drinks, she hands Grace's list to Evan. He reads down her wishes, pausing for a moment on, "A pony to live in my closet?" Shelby doesn't respond, and he continues down the list and asks, "A ride with Snowball." "Who's Snowball?" Shelby responds, "You know, the white horse that pulls your carriage. The elves just love it." Evan questions, "Why would you put something like that in a story?" Shelby responds, "I don't know. It sounded good when I made it up." Evan continues down the list, incredulous. "Make a snowman come to life?" He continues. "Win most Christmassy house." Shelby addresses that one. "Yeah, that one may be tricky. There's a family in the neighborhood who has won it for the past 20 years. Evan looks at the list. "Oh, and then she wants tea at La Maison?" Shelby pishposhes. That shouldn't be hard. Evan raises his eyebrows. Sure, if you're the president or an A-list celebrity, no one gets a reservation there. Shelby pushes aside his concerns. As my group says, focus on one thing at a time, and if you're going to be the Christmas prince, you've got to lose the pocket protector vibe.
You know what I did notice about this last section? This is a seriously whipped topping beverage movie. Like Shelby in so many scenes is like drinking something from a mug. And I'm like, is the whipped cream going to get her? No.
Yeah.
Is it going to get on her nose? No.
Yeah.
I was like, next time I watch this, I am going to play a whipped drinking game. So every time Shelby has a beverage with whipped cream on it in her hand, I'm taking a shot and I'm going to see how I end up at the end of the movie. Also encourage you to do that, gentle listeners. If you happen to have or happen to be watching this movie along with your relatives this holiday season and it's not spicy enough for you, just take a shot every time Shelby has a whipped beverage in her hand. Whipped beverage equals Christmas fun.
You don't need to worry about that liver of yours.
I never do. Yeah, okay. And back to the movie. Yes, gentle listeners, it's makeover time. But don't get too excited. There's no fashion montage. Shelby ultimately puts Evan in a cement gray sweater, which makes him look good, but it's not festive. Well, first of all, she puts him in that tacky, ugly Santa elf sweater. That was epic.
Yes.
But she can feel that he is not digging the vibe. And so she's like, ha ha, just kidding. Go put on this cement one, which he does.
It was a knit Christmas sweater so that it looked like there was a tiny elf arms and legs. And then by the neck, there was his head. So it was, you know, giant head, yeah. tiny elf body. Yeah, it was amazing looking. And also she just had him put it on to laugh at him, not at him in a mean way, but just because she thought it would be amusing. And it was.
Oh, I think she was like, you're going to learn today. Yeah, you're being an asshole. I'm just going to make you pay just a tiny bit for it. Put this on.
She should have taken pictures.
She should have. Back at work, Evan is in a different sweater and his sister's dropped by to visit. He's not happy with the whole situation. The sweater cost $200 and is dry clean only? Annalise rebukes. It looks great on you. You can totally afford it. And I'm thinking this whole experience will be good for you. Help you get in touch with your inner child. I cringed a little at the $200 sweater remark too, because
I was wondering about that.
Yes. I literally have like 5 pairs of pants that I love that fit me great. And I have worn the bejeebus out of them. And so I have the thigh rubbage in between my legs, which constantly causes the jeans to get holes in that specific area of the pants. So I found these iron-on patches at Amazon and I was so thrilled because I got to fix and gussy up all my pants so they were all wearable again. Like for the past 6 or 7 years, I've probably held on to some of these just hoping one day that I would get the gumption to actually fix them. And I did.
Right.
And I was so fucking happy. And then one by one, they ripped right around the patches I put on them. Some bitch.
Oh, that's so sad.
I got another like 5 or 6 months use out of them, but then like slowly but surely, it's like a dam where you put your finger in the hole and then slowly the seams break around it and it just like pops leaks in different areas.
Yeah.
It's like the inner thighs of all my jeans right now. It's very upsetting.
Oh.
And some of them are really expensive, which pisses me off. So $200 sweaters be damned. Sometimes they're not worth it, especially after dry clean only. Fuck that.
Yeah, I'm not into the dry clean only life.
Uh-uh. No, never. It won't do it. It'll never get cleaned. It'll just go in the washing machine and get ruined. Evan agrees with me. Or actually, no. Evan's dubious about what his sister said. I've never had an inner child, and I really don't think I'm going to be able to pass as a Christmas prince. Annalise affirms, it's true. You are the only kid that I knew that hated recess. Evan agrees, I never saw the point. You've always been good with people. I have not. Annalise assures him that he'll be fine and mentions that Shelby's pretty. Evan says, I've never noticed. And Annalise says, well, maybe you should. He rolls his eyes, stating, I'm going back to work. And with that, the siblings part ways.
Aww.
When Shelby and Grace are back at home, Shelby tries to get her daughter to tone down her list, but it isn't very effective. She makes a tiny bit of headway, though, when Shelby points out, you wouldn't want the Christmas prince to think you're greedy. And Grace agrees, okay, I'll cross off the pony. So that's no more pony in the closet. And I'll get the Christmas prince to help you with your toy drive and leave the rest of the wishes as they are. And I was super disappointed at this because I wanted to see them work in the pony in the closet because, you know, like sometimes, not like those movies where they say they want something, then they do something cool with the turn of the phrase. I think it was The Fault in Our Stars where this guy tries to grant everything on his love interest's wish list. Uh-huh. And one of the things that she wanted to do was be in two places at once. So he took her to the state line and had her straddle like 1 foot in one state and 1 foot in the other state. And right. He's like, see, now you're in two places at once. And she was like so tickled. So I like completely imagined them to do something like this with the pony in the closet. And I feel like I was robbed.
Well, I feel like I was robbed with our Obsessed Fest, our swag bags, where they were like, you're going to get these amazing swag bags. And it was kind of like, if you do this, you're going to get a car. And we're like, okay, we'll do this. And then we get a toy car. And we're like, that wasn't what I thought I was going to be getting.
Yes, that feeling that you have right now, Corinne. Pony in the closet for me.
Karsha's sudden but inevitable betrayal.
That is my Obsessed Fest right there.
Oh my gosh. Later when Evan and Shelby are meeting, Evan isn't happy that the wishes haven't been made more manageable. Shelby argues, you didn't let me finish. I talked Grace out of kissing a reindeer, which would have been easily achievable, I might add.
Thanks. I thought so too.
I know. And making a snowman come alive. Not so easy. That would have been tough. Also, I convinced Grace that you have a ton of stuff to do during the week. So instead of 12 wishes, you only have 8, which leaves us 3 weekends until Christmas at 2 wishes per weekend. Evan argues, that's 6 wishes. And Shelby smiles guiltily. Well, I threw in a couple of extra for good behavior. She's been doing so well. I couldn't resist. Anyhow, the first wish is really easy. A Christmas-themed sleepover with Grace's friends. Evan looks appalled. You want me to sleep over with children? Shelby pish-poshes. No, don't be ridiculous. You're just meeting them and showing her and her friends what a kind, generous, fun prince you are. Evan asks, and when is this happening? Shelby says, tonight.
That's kind of a dick move, Shelby. That's a little bit of a dick move.
Evan starts hyperventilating because, as Tamara says, that's a little bit of a dick move. He's not ready. Mm-hmm. He's not ready.
No. But
Shelby assures him, all you have to do is come in, introduce yourself, hang out for a little bit, and you'll be done. But Evan isn't feeling very reassured. That evening, Evan shows up at the house and Shelby meets him outside, but he tells Shelby unequivocally, nope, I'm not doing this. And we'll find out what happens after the break.
And we're back. I have a guess. Grace comes back and is super pissed that she got finangled out of her 12 wishes because the Christmas prince is too busy. Fuck that shit. Why do I have to lose out? Just because he's overbooked this season. Ugh. Not fair. Totally not fair.
Totally not fair.
It seems like Evan's going to firmly back out until Grace sees him through the window, and Evan feels compelled to stick around as she runs out to greet him. Shelby quickly tells him, smile like a prince! And Evan responds by looking petrified and putting a stiff half smile on his face. Grace doesn't notice and enthusiastically brings him in, introducing him to 4 of her friends from school and Nicole's daughter. The girls enthusiastically pepper him with questions, but fortunately for him, they're asking questions over each other so he doesn't have to answer any of them. Finally, Grace suggests that Evan tell a story, as the Christmas prince is the best storyteller in the North Pole. But Grace wants a particular story, which Shelby tries helping him out with. Then Evan must spread his storytelling wings and fly on his own, which has him riffing about a reindeer plague, bad choice, an extended court battle with Santa, and somehow Godzilla made it onto the North Pole as well. Shelby looks distressed, thinking, there's no way the kids are buying this, and one blonde girl looks very dubious, but everyone is attentively listening until he says, the end, nervously. Shelby and Evan head outside, and once they're away from the kids, Evan is pissed. That was the most humiliating thing I've ever done. Shelby scoffs, believe me, it was worth watching it.
Oh.
Godzilla moved into the North Pole. Really? They both agree that this isn't going to work until Grace runs outside, clasping a piece of paper in her hand. Christmas Prince! Christmas Prince! I didn't get to say goodbye. My friends love you. They think you're really funny. Seriously? Evan, startled, replies, well, that's good. And Grace shoves a piece of paper towards him, stating, I made you this! He opens the paper, and she drew a beautiful picture of the two of them holding hands next to a Christmas tree. We're going to be nice and assume that she made it in preparation for his visit, because there's no way she would have had the time to do such a highly rendered drawing in the time it took for her mom and Evan to chat outside. Or, let's just take note that she is also, what, like six? Five?
Seven.
That is drawing. She's seven. That drawing's way too advanced for a seven-year-old.
Yes.
Way too advanced. Evan looks at his picture. Is this you and me? He asks her, and she confidently responds, yes, Evan says, but we're holding hands. And Grace agrees, do you like it? He smiles softly at her and says, I do very much. Grace answers, good, because I've decided to change one of my wishes. I want to wish for the two of you to go on a real date. Shelby and Evan look at each other with yikes expressions, but I'd just be relieved to cross another one of her hard-to-obtain wishes off the list. And I've talked about this with you earlier, Corinne. What is the likelihood that a seven-year-old is going to give up one of her very mild wishes to send her mother on a date with the Christmas prince? I don't think I'd be that generous when I was seven, but that's just me.
Yeah, but if you want the Christmas prince to be your dad, this is how you are going to make it happen.
Not only does she get her wishes cut down from 12 to what, six?
Eight.
Eight. Now she's giving her mom one to go on a date and get some.
She didn't say anything about them having sex with each other.
I know. I'm putting that in there for a little extra spice.
Oh, okay. Hello.
Inventing the Christmas prince.
Flash forward to Shelby and Evan going on a date. And cue the scintillating conversation where Evan observes that Shelby has carrots on her plate. And Shelby chugs wine. Shelby cleverly changes the topic to their mutual passion, their work. They both admit to always... You're shaking your head. What's going on?
Did you actually look at her plate? Because when you mentioned this, when I was looking at the movie and your outline, I was like, what the fuck is she eating? Because she has like two baby carrots on her plate and then a bunch of vegetables. Who goes to a restaurant and just... Like, it doesn't even look like attractive or delicious vegetables. It's like she's got a random smattering of vegetables on her plate with carrots. I was very disappointed.
Maybe it's an appetizer. An aperitif, if you will. Tamlin looks like she smelled something stinky.
Yeah, no matter what you call it, it still looked bad. Bad, bad, bad.
Shelby cleverly changes the topic to their mutual passion, their work, not wanting to focus on the horrible food in front of her, including the carrots that shall not be named, that shall not be addressed. They both admit to always having wanted to work in space, but Evan admits that even though this is pretty much his dream job, he struggles with the managerial side of things. What? Color me surprised. Shelby asks him, why do you think that is? And Evan confesses, it's hard to connect when your moniker is Dr. Spock. I get the nickname, I'm just not comfortable being social. Same, Evan.
I'm sure it's just your name that's doing it. Sure. That's the main reason. Mm-hmm.
Well,
right.
Does add an extra layer of awkwardness to things. Although I did have a huge crush on Spock growing up, and I felt an affinity towards him. And I was like, yes, I feel you, Spock, on a lot of things.
Those ears really do something for me.
The ears, the bangs... the eyebrows, I mean, just like the whole look, I was there for it.
Oh my gosh, you should totally dress up like him for one Halloween, or like Mrs. Spock. You could do some epic things with those brows if you just like angle them up. Oh my God. Oh my God. They would be dangerous. Your eyebrows would be dangerous.
I'm just imagining my bangs and trying to get my way out of that haircut after I got it done.
We'll just get you a wig.
Oh, okay. That's going to be great. You are definitely doing my makeup. And by the way, Spock always had like a light blue kind of eyeshadow over his eyes, on his eyelids.
You shut the fuck up. Really?
Yeah.
Did he really?
Yeah.
How did I not notice that, being the makeup fashionista that I was back in the day?
Well, I mean, you probably did not have a crush on Spock, so you would not necessarily noticed these things. Yes.
Wasn't gazing as intently into his eyes as you were. That
exactly. Shelby suggests, I get that you have a hard time connecting with people, but you should try to engage. Ask them about their lives. Tell them you appreciate them. Just don't hide in your office 24/7. Evan cuts her off. Okay, thanks. And they both look awkwardly at their plates of food. Shelby exclaims, well, this is, Evan fills in, excruciating. Shelby looks around the room. I was going to say interesting, but, you know, just trying to make the best of it. Evan suggests they say they went on the date and go home. But Shelby insists, I don't lie to my daughter. Evan stares at her. Really? This entire thing is a lie.
Fucking mic drop.
Yes.
Mic drop, Evan.
Yes. I love that they call that out in the movie. Like, let's address this issue. You're fucking lying to your child.
The whole plot line of this movie is a lie.
Yes.
Shh. Secrets.
Yeah.
I mean, a secret. Oh, shit. It's a secret.
Yeah. Yep. Or it could be A Christmas of Lies. I usually reserve those, though, for like when people are pretending to be someone who they aren't, but not in a Christmas Prince kind of way, in a different kind of way. But yeah.
In a regular Prince kind of way, not the Christmas kind.
Well, because as Shelby points out, it's a Santa lie. It's not a, I'm trying to pretend to be somebody who I'm not in order to like gain this kind of relationship with somebody else or find out X kind of information. This is a reason where you're adding extra whimsy and magic into your child's life.
You just basically like said the next line in Corinne verbatimism.
And that is what Shelby says.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And my parents disagreed with this. They were like,
that makes so much sense why you love Christmas so much now. Because you're like, it's my time, motherfucker. I want sparkle and magic. I'm going to get sparkle and magic.
I've always been about sparkle and magic. I swear I saw Santa once back at the house on Gawain Drive. And I...
You didn't tell me?
Yeah. I went in the family room and there Santa was by the stockings. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then Santa was like, shh. And then he like went away. Yes.
And I repeat, you didn't tell me?
It was a secret. Shh. Secret.
Sounds like a Christmas lie. Or what? A Santa lie.
No, this was not a Santa lie. This was like, I honestly have a memory of that happening.
Yes. And then you lied to me because you didn't tell me. So therefore it is a Santa lie of a different color, but still a Santa lie.
You didn't ask me if I ever saw Santa putting presents in my stocking.
Oh my God. That's a given. We grew up together. These are the things that we needed to discuss.
I just knew like a lot of people at that point in time weren't like super into Santa. And I was just like, but I am. And I saw Santa. So there you go. But also, I was very dubious of those faker Santas with the fakey beards and stuff like that. And I'm like, no, I don't want anything to do with you Santas. Go away, imposters.
Yeah, I hated the fakey Santa beards. I'm like, the real bearded guys, I'm like, all right, maybe.
Yes.
I'm looking at you with less suspicion. But yes. The fakey ones, I'm like, we all know that that's fake hair.
Yeah.
I'm not even into like my full-on beauty regime mode, but I even know that's fake.
Yeah. It's funny because my parents were like, we will not sit down and say like Santa isn't real, but we just won't like address the topic.
Sounds just like your parents.
Because we're not going to lie to our children. So if I asked them, is Santa real? they would have responded, right? But my next door neighbor, Kathy, was like, I can't believe you haven't taken the girls to see Santa. And my mom was like, yeah, no, that's not happening. And she's like, can I take the girls to see Santa? They need to see Santa. And so Kathy actually took me and Bridget to see Santa one year at the mall.
Kathy Benovich, our next door neighbor, yeah, for clarification.
She lived in between Tamara and I on the block. And in my universe, she was like a second grandma, or a third grandma, I would rather say. But she was like a grandma, an additional grandma. In Tamara's universe, not so much.
No, she was the lady that told me to stop going into her yard to get my ball.
Yeah, yeah. So totally different relationships. So I don't think that you had the experience of riding in her giant
Caprice classic
while she smoked cigarettes and you slid around on the front like seat that had like was just a single thing all the way across.
Bench seats.
Yes.
The slippery bench seats that had no traction, so it took a sharp turn. You slammed up against the window.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good times. That's good times. That's why 80s kids are so hardy.
But that Santa was an imposter. I'm just telling you right now, I did not like it one bit. Magic, whimsy, blah, blah, blah. Every reason why Corinne loves Christmas. Evan is ruffled. Yeah, but this entire ruse with Grace is excessive. I don't understand why you are going so far with this. Shelby narrows her eyes at him. Grace has had a hard life. Her father died when she was 5. That was kind of hard. Okay? Evan apologizes. I'm sorry, I didn't know. And Shelby gives him the look. The look. As she says, Tamara can illustrate the look. She's good at the look.
I'm giving you the look right now.
Yes. Why should you? You only authorized my bereavement leave and you never asked how I was doing. You didn't ask who died. Nothing. ... asshole in parentheses. Evan looks very uncomfortable. I'm sorry. I don't remember that. They both realize that this date is stick a fork in it, done, and wrap things up so they can both get the fuck out of there.
I don't know what's worse, him remembering it and being like, sorry, I was an asshole, or not remembering it at all. Like, goddamn, that was like the worst time of your life, and it wasn't even a blip on my radar. Sorry. Back to the movie. However, even with the back date, Shelby and Evan are in it to win it. With the Christmas Prince Act. With 4 wishes left and a few days later, they head to Les Maisons and beg the maitre d' for a table for afternoon tea. Evan has a connection, but his connection doesn't seem to have enough pull as the maitre d' is unimpressed. No reservations available. No tea for you! When Evan presses, there must be something you could do about getting us in tomorrow, the maitre d' offers. Would you like to see tomorrow's seating chart? Evan excitedly agrees, and after a brief perusal on a fully booked table setting, he shows how by moving a few people around, voila, there's room. The maitre d' still has no fucks to give and snarkily says, poor planning on your part does not necessarily constitute an emergency on mine. He actually doesn't say that, but I have many a time in all of my workplaces have been dying to say that to somebody. So I'm saying it on behalf of the maitre d'.
Hey, I gave you the portion where she just like quits on the fly because I thought it would be a cathartic experience for you.
Cathartic experience. It's a cathartic experience for you because you're like, yeah, no fucks to give. Get the fuck out of there. And I'm like, bitch, where are you going to work? How many rocket shops do you have in that town?
Burn it all down! Burn it all down!
You know, those are like not all over. That is where the decision to make her a rocket scientist, although admirable, like kind of made a few logistical complications. Because like if she runs a cafe or she works in a flower shop or a bakery, like you can get a job anywhere else at another flower shop bakery place if you decide to quit. Being a rocket scientist, however, I'm sure does not afford you a lot of options.
But it does pay well. And if you're really good at your job, which she seemed to be, then you would have some demand around you. So I would think that she has a nice little nest egg to live off of in the interim while she figures out what
to do.
That
is true. And I also, like, I looked at her house and I'm like, okay, yeah, that tracks. Whereas some other times when you're like, you're a waitress and you live in a $3 million penthouse in New York.
Yeah.
Really? Really, Hallmark?
Here's my flower shop where I give away flowers for free and occasionally sell a small bouquet. Yes, this is my giant penthouse in New York. Thank you.
And in addition to my giant penthouse in New York, here are my 7 employees that all have like a spot in my love story. Shelby knows Evan's approach will only make the maitre d' dig in his heels, so she interrupts their exchange and asks the maitre d' what his name is. He says, George. Shelby shines her smile on George and asks, can we have a quick moment? It'll be super duper fast. George is beleaguered but agrees, as long as it's super duper fast, I'm about to take my lunch. Next thing we know, as Evan sits in the lobby, Shelby, who has pulled George off to the side to talk, has him crying, dabbing his eyes at a cloth, and then he sees them give each other a heartfelt hug. Evan looks confused, and Shelby and George return to the front of the restaurant, with George saying, promise you'll have your Aunt Elma call me. Shelby agrees, I will, and make sure to come over New Year's Eve around 8. Heavy hors d'oeuvres. You don't need to bring a thing. They laugh and warmly hug each other again, and George turns towards Evan, warmly greeting him. Hello, sir. We're looking forward to seeing Grace tomorrow at our Christmas tea. I'll be sure to give her our best table. On their drive back to work, Evan's confused. What did you do to that guy? How did you get the reservation? Shelby explains that if you listen to people, they frequently will reveal their soft, chewy center to you, and that's how you relate with them. / you're in.
Later, Evan is at home consulting with his sister about what he should wear. They figure that out, and then he asks her, okay, but what do I say to her? Annalise says, don't overthink it. It's tea with a 7-year-old. Be in the moment. Evan asks, sure, but what if I'm trying to get where she's coming from? Annalise assesses her brother and says, wow, you really care about this little girl. And Evan responds, it's not that. It's just that they've had a hard time and I want to do what I can to make them feel better. Annalise smiles softly at her brother. Evan, you have the biggest heart. Try and let them see that and you'll be just fine.
See, again, Annalise says he has a big heart. He doesn't seem to show his big heart to any of his employees in the many, many years they've worked together.
He doesn't know how to. The next day, Evan waits awkwardly out front of the restaurant, and as soon as Grace sees him, she excitedly exclaims to her mom, it's him! It's the Christmas prince! He's here! She waves excitedly at him, and he nervously says, you look, fancy. Grace smiles wide. So do you! You look handsome! Evan asks her if she's ready for tea, and she responds, yes! Shelby reminds her to be on her best behavior and lets her know that she'll be waiting for her. And Evan and Grace enter la maison and get seated for tea.
So,
yes.
Why isn't Shelby going in and having tea with them? Would it, like, disrupt the magic if she was there with her kid and her boss that she doesn't necessarily like that much? Should Child Protective Services get involved? Like, I don't know if I would let my child go and have a lunch or tea with not a stranger, but not necessarily somebody I know that well.
I mean, they're in a public spot. They're not going anywhere from that public spot. And he's already interacted with her a few different times. So
I guess I'm just trying to get a seat at the table if it was me. I'd be like, oh, we're going to where for tea? Okay, there's going to be sandwiches, refreshments, and pastries. That's a table for 3, right? 3?
I remember as a kid feeling like really nice and kind of grown up when I would get to do outings with other adults that weren't my parents when they weren't there.
Mm. I don't think that's ever happened to me. I will take things that never happened to me for $500, Bob. Except when it was my grandma and that one story I told a long time ago where she was like, Mija, look at that guy. I'll honk you wave. That she did treat me like an adult, but it was more like her
that's
wing
a different
woman
kind of a, no.
pick up men on the corner. Yeah, that's the kind of adult experience I got, not tea at Les Maisons.
Okay, gentle listeners, tea goes great. I know you are all highly concerned, but it goes great. Grace confesses that she's wanted to learn to play the piano for years and years, partially because she wants to play Christmas carols because her dad loved them. And Evan tells her an abbreviated story about Pegasus, the constellation, the myth, and the winged horse. While they have their tea, Shelby is in a nearby coffee shop talking on the phone with her bestie, Nicole, freaking the fuck out. She says, I have intentionally not dated so that Grace wouldn't get attached to a man and get her heart broken. And now I'm wondering what I've done. Because here she is with Evan and she lights up every time she sees him. What if she ends up getting her heart broken? Nicole sensibly responds, well, guess you'll have to help her pick up the pieces if that happens. But Shelby is not soothed by this thought.
After the tea, Grace and Evan walk down the sidewalk to meet back up with Shelby. On their way, Grace asks why Evan doesn't have a princess. Evan admits, sometimes finding a princess can be hard. And Corinne fully agrees with Evan, because she's been kissing frogs and so far none of them have turned.
Yes.
Grace says, I get it. My mom doesn't have anyone either, but she promised me she'd never get married again. But I never asked her to. Just then, Grace sees her mom down the street and excitedly runs up to her, exclaiming, Mommy, I had the best time! When Shelby asks Grace, have you said thank you? Grace hugs Evan, saying, thank you, you're the best Christmas prince ever! I want to go to tea. I don't need to go with the Christmas prince, but I want to go with fancy drinks and sandwiches in the shapes of fingers and scones and pastries.
Okay, we can
don't
do
you?
We can do tea sometime, sure. I'll put on one of my party dresses. It'll be fun.
I know, I don't have a tea dress. That's the only thing. Maybe I can Jimmy Finagle one of my totally torn up pairs of jeans and make it work.
Make it work.
Make it work.
You're going to have your Project Runway moment. It's going to be so good.
No, I won't. Those jeans are so tattered up. And I hardly had any material, so I basically turned my jeans into denim pasties because that's all I had material for.
I'm going to get you a dress from Unique Vintage, and it's going to be hella cute, and you're going to be looking so fly in it. It's going to be amazing.
I was totally not serious. I can buy my own dresses. I can do it. I'm just too cheap. I have to talk myself into it.
You would select the dress, though. I would not select it for you because, you know, my dress would be, like, full of whimsy and all this other bullshit in it that you don't want, so...
I like a little whimsy in my life sometimes. I like a lot of whimsy in my life a lot of times, just not in my clothes.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree that you have whimsy in your heart. It just doesn't get displayed through your outfits. Yes.
Yeah, that's mostly because I'm like, don't look at me. Why are you looking at me? Stop. Nobody pay attention to me. I am not here.
Yes, you are, and you're glorious. You're beautiful. You're gorgeous. I love it.
I think that was just like all the years in retail where you're like, I'm just going to stand right by this mannequin and hope nobody notices me so I don't have to help anybody. Back to the regular work week for Shelby, not Tamara, where she talks with her bestie Lorenzo, confessing, after the tea, Evan actually seemed kind of charming. Lorenzo's shocked and Shelby agrees. This whole thing is really unnerving, but do you think he could actually be good for Grace? Lorenzo chuckles. Even Spock was half human. Lorenzo turns back towards his desk and quickly calls over Shelby because a satellite is drifting off course. Shelby calls Evan over because this emergency is probably going to warrant some overtime, and he loves overtime. Lorenzo excuses himself to make a call, and Shelby asks him, don't you have tickets to a late showing of It's a Wonderful Life? Lorenzo confirms, yeah, but this is more important. Shelby looks over at Evan, and Evan realizes, oh, wait, this is one of those moments that Shelby has talked about.
Yes.
He tells Lorenzo, go to your movie. Shelby and I can handle it. And Lorenzo is shocked and surprised to actually be able to fulfill his plans.
Yay!
A little later, Shelby and Evan are alone doing sciencey things and inputting data.
Where you want to input that data, Evan? Where?
Winky, winky. They just need to run the simulator for a couple of hours to figure out if their calculations are correct. While they wait, Shelby asks, I'm going to go grab a coffee and head to the roof. You want to join me? He accepts and drink shots, because I think there's probably whipped cream in there.
Shots.
Next thing we know, they're hanging out on the roof.
Up on the rooftop, reindeer's paws.
Santa Claus. Evan asks Shelby what it's like being a single parent, and she tells him all about it, including how she created a support group. They have a nice talk, and when they return to the office, the data's in. Shelby lets Evan know that she can take it from here, and he surprisingly tells her that she should come in later because she stayed late. Yay! Good move, boss man! But before he leaves, he also mentions to her, I just want to let you know that I was wrong for not saying anything about your husband. I know I'm several years late, but I wanted to acknowledge that I am truly sorry for your loss. Shelby looks at Evan softly and responds, thank you. I appreciate that. And then they make out like gangbusters on top of her desk and wipe everything aside. Just kidding. It's a Hallmark movie.
I like your fantasy, though. I'm down for it. Yeah. The next afternoon, when she comes in, Evan is doing a low-key Christmas celebration with
Balsam Hill Tia decor.
And Lorenzo is floored and afraid that everyone is getting fired. But Shelby has seen his gradual transformation and assures Lorenzo that his job is safe. Evan approaches the duo with homemade Christmas cookies, and then Evan and Shelby talk Christmas Prince business.
Those Christmas cookies for a second. Because he had, like, the very noticeable ones and then the brown squidgy kind of ones. Yeah. And when he presented the plate, I'm like, what the fuck have you done, Evan? What are those cookies supposed to be? They're reindeers, but they don't look like reindeers. They look like brown somethings, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, Lorenzo's looking at the reindeer cookie and Evan's like, I decorated it myself. It's reindeer and snowmen. And Lorenzo keeps on looking at the reindeer cookie like it's a poo cookie instead. And Evan literally takes the cookie from Lorenzo's hand and shoves a snowman cookie into it and is like, here, try this one. And then Lorenzo takes a bite and he's like, oh, this is actually good.
Yeah. This is why I never come out of my office, motherfucker. Stop criticizing my shit.
So one of Grace's last wishes is a grand piano. Shelby tells him, I looked into it and they start at 20 grand. The both of them know that's not going to happen. However, Evan has an idea. Do you mind if I come over tonight? See, it's just like your state line, two places at one time. This is your moment. This is what you've been waiting for.
I'm just going to say it's no pony in the closet, but I'll allow it.
He has a solution to the grand piano dilemma. Does he? But he does. But does he? Shelby is very grateful and agrees. Just then, their conversation is interrupted by Evan's boss man, Scott, calling, and Evan excuses himself to take the call. Evan ducks into his office, and once he's there, Scott informs Evan that he's under review. Evan asks, am I getting fired? But Scott doesn't know anything about the situation. Scott is one of the most useless upper managements. But then again, upper management and useless kind of go together, so.
Mm-mm. I'm going to venture a guess that Scott absolutely fucking knows what the meeting's about. He is not and cannot be that clueless as to not knowing whether it's a good meeting or a bad meeting. And I'm just saying, like, shit always flows downhill. So maybe that's why Evan was such a crappy boss, because Scott is also a crappy boss. Like, seriously, why is he going to go out and communicate and try with his team if Scott's like, I don't know what the meeting's about. I have no idea.
Oh, Scott, go play your fucking whatever it is, racquetball or whatever.
Pickleball.
Scott doesn't know anything about the situation. Thanks for the heart attack, Scott. Much appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Bullshit, I call bullshit.
That evening, Grace and Shelby are preparing Christmas cards when there's a ding-dong. They go to the door and it's Evan, a.k.a.
the Christmas Prince.
Grace is thrilled to see
Balsam
him.
Balsam Hill TM.
Until he reveals that he's brought the Christmas wish with him and pulls a large plastic electric piano from underneath his jacket. She looks very disappointed. This is definitely not a grand piano. Shelby looks disappointed. They look disappointed. Until Evan informs Grace, there's a story behind this piano. You want to hear it? And I'm like, this better be a fucking grand story, because this piano looks shitty. Like, it's not even a cute electric piano. It looks like the 90s coughed it up and left it behind. And
that's exactly where it came from.
Yeah. The sparkle returns to Grace's eyes when she hears there's a story, and she nods happily as Shelby smiles approvingly over her shoulder. Evan sits Grace down with the piano, setting it on the coffee table. He explains to her, and this is such a sweet moment, that the elves made this piano many years ago. And yes, that is definitely not a current electric piano. I'm guessing it's from Evan's childhood.
Many a Naughty by Nature song have been played on it.
Yeah. He explains, this piano was meant to create great joy to whoever was lucky enough to play it. But year by year, nobody wanted it. Some children wanted a grand piano. Others only wanted one made of wood. So each year, this piano got passed over, and it became more and more sad, because more than anything, it just wanted to be played and to bring joy into people's lives. This piano needed a special girl, one with a big, generous heart, one who gave up her own wishes to help people in things like toy drives. Grace smiles big. It was waiting for me? Evan smiles back. Yep, it sure was. It waited all those years just for you. Grace tentatively hits the keys and says appreciatively to Evan, it's beautiful. After Grace goes to bed, Evan and Shelby have a moment together over cups of cocoa. Is there whipped cream?
Drink!
Yes, saw the cocoa. Evan admits that Grace is wonderful, and he understands now why Shelby would do anything for her. He asks her what her husband was like, and she talks about what a big presence he was. But what she liked most of all was how reliable he was, which is why it was so hard for her when he died. He did not just leave for cigarettes. She never expected him to leave for cigarettes. She knows intellectually he was sick, but emotionally she wasn't prepared for the most steadfast presence in her life to die.
Probably from the cigarettes. That story was super sweet. I was like, if you ever want to sell an outdated piece of crap electronics, just use that story. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I was buying it. I saw that piano and I was on Team Grace like, oh, fuck no with that piano. But then the way he told the story, I was like, really? Really? It's slowly? And it's just like, it's even a dream in the heart of gold? Yeah! Oh, I'm such a sucker.
Yes. When he came over, you're like, that is not a baby grand in your pocket. No, it is not.
No. No.
Some time passes, and we then see Santa and his elves coming over to watch a movie with Grace. And that Santa had a fake beard. Bad, bad look.
Please get a
real bearded Santa. Come on.
Well, and later.
Come on, people. What have we taught you?
At the Christmas dance. Santa? Beautiful, natural bearded Santa. Why didn't they have that Santa come on over to Grace's for the movie night?
Somebody's phoning it in.
Seriously.
First, Miss Grace doesn't get her 12 wishes. She only gets 8. And then she keeps giving them away to her parents to do good things. And then she gets a shitty keyboard that she actually kind of likes at the end. And then she gets ripped off with a fake-ass Santa. This girl has more patience than I have. And I'm much older than her. and later Grace diving into her own personal-sized gingerbread house. Likely made out of the wonder material cardboard, you gotta admire its versatility.
Mm-hmm.
Grace seems to love it, and Tamara, as a child, would be disappointed because I know my childhood goal for a gingerbread house to play in would be to later eat the house. And you can't eat cardboard. You can, but you'll probably have an upset stomach and be pooping for days. When Shelby meets with the other women in her support group, they marvel at how well things have gone, and we find out that Grace has two more wishes left. Wish number one, the toy drive, and two, the Christmas dance. And Shelby reveals to the other moms that Skyrocket called, and they're very interested in her, hinting that the job is hers if she wants it. She has an interview on Monday, but if she took the job, she'd have to start in California on January 1st. One day after school, while Grace and her friend Jessie, Nicole's daughter, are waiting to be picked up, Bullshit Sherman approaches them and smiles slyly. It's too bad you guys can't go to the Christmas dance. You don't have family to go with, just moms, he says smugly. Jessie informs him that she's going with her mom and her uncle, and Grace proudly informs him that she's going with the Christmas prince. Sherman scoffs at this. He's a made-up prince who's not going to come, even if he was real. Just then, Shelby and Nicole approach their daughters, and Shelby quickly assesses that something's going on, and she asks if everything's okay. Sherman responds lightly, I was just kidding around with Grace and Nicole, and Grace isn't having it. He wasn't kidding. That's what he always says when he knows he's wrong, even though he meant to do it to begin with. Shelby eyes Sherman suspiciously and says to him, tell your mom I said hi and thanks for her contribution to the toy drive. And why the fuck doesn't somebody tell Sherman to, like, stop being a dick? Like, they've seen him be problematic in many areas, and they're just like, I can't tell anybody else's kid how to behave. I'm just going to ignore it and walk away and tell your mom I said thank you. I'm like,
I know. The way that Sherman is handled, or rather not handled, I questioned that. I'm like, is this how you're supposed to handle, quote, handle bullying these days? I don't know, but it just doesn't seem right.
Uh-huh. Especially in this section, because your daughter is blatantly telling you that he's doing something wrong, and you're like, tell your mama said hello.
Yeah.
Like, no. Like, I want to address the situation at hand. You don't want to just brush your daughter's feelings under the rug and be like, this is not fuck politeness time, honey.
Well, you know, I got punished for being picked on when I got into the fight with the person. So, you know.
Oh.
In middle school. Yeah.
Yeah. Same, but I mean, it's a different time in a different place.
Yeah.
Like, I recall vividly, and I think I've told this story maybe a time or two, where I was playing boy chases girl, girl chases boy, which is basically like tag, but boys against girls.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, must have been owning this kid, because he saw it fit to, like, come after me, and he tapped me on the shoulder, and when I turned around, he punched me right in the face hard enough to, like, make my nose and my mouth bleed.
Oh my gosh.
And I went to the nurse's office, like, sobbing my eyes out, because I'm like, where the fuck did that come from?
Yeah.
We were just playing, like, a second ago. Like, it was out of nowhere, and I don't think he did it maliciously. I just think maybe, like, he was just too wound up and saw me as a companion instead of somebody not to hit. And then when I got to the nurse's office, they had to call my dad in. And when my dad came into the nurse's office, she was telling him, she's like, oh, yeah, she got hit with the ball. And I'm like, no, I didn't. I got socked in the face by so-and-so. And she's like, no, you got hit in the face with the ball, didn't you? And I'm like, no, I got socked in the face. Like, did you not hear me, lady? Like, when I was bawling, going, fucking motherfucker, hit me. So-and-so fucking hit me. Like, I didn't say fucking.
Yeah.
Scared to death to curse back then. But then I realized now that she was probably trying to protect him in some weird, stupid way by making it more accidental.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, fuck you, lady. Don't protect the bully. You don't know what kind of damage that does to a kid. Like, you're invalidating their feelings and what's happening to them, because, and basically saying to them, this other person's more important than you, so we're going to protect them and make sure that they're okay, while brushing your shit and your bloody nose and your lip under the rug.
Yeah. Good times. Good times.
Thankfully, that bitch finally said, oh, somebody hit you in the face. And I'm like, motherfucker, that's what I said. Somebody hit me in the face. Like, I did not stutter. Stop trying to tell me what happened out in the playground. I was there. But same thing. My dad started getting upset, like, you got hit in the face. I'm like, yeah, my fault. I just put my face like right in front of this kid's fist. I know, right? Parents.
We were just supposed to suck it up, Tam. That was the whole issue. Just suck
kids
it up.
Kids are supposed to be seen, not heard.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're not supposed to be heard or inconvenience your parents at all.
Suck it up. Suck it up.
We came out so well-rounded.
I know, right? So good.
No, that's tears, not laughter, Corinne. That was tears. It's miscued the room. The foursome heads to the toy drive, and true to his word, the Christmas prince is there, and they hand out toys together. At the end of the evening, Shelby, Grace, and the Christmas prince go home. Shelby tucks Grace into bed, and Grace excitedly tells her mom, I can't wait for the Christmas dance. That's my top wish. Grace looks over at Evan, who is standing in the doorway witnessing the cuteness of it all, and she asks him, you're still coming, right? And he responds, I wouldn't miss it for the world. Grace says, good night, Christmas prince. Love you. He pauses a beat and says, I love you too, little one. And you can tell that she has found his soft, squishy center.
Aww. It's so sweet when he's standing in the doorway and he's like, you can see this look pass over his face like, oh shit, she just told me that she loved me. Okay, what do I do with this? And then he's like, tell her I love her. Yeah, I love you.
I love you.
After Grace falls asleep, Evan and Shelby go onto her balcony and look at the stars. They bond over Andromeda being their favorite constellation story, and Shelby talks about how beautiful the starry night is as she stares up at the sky, and Evan responds, yes, it is, as he stares at her with heart eyes. A common Hallmark trope.
Yes, look
at this beautiful scenery. Yes, it is, as the other person just stares at them.
Not as beautiful as you.
Love all. Evan confesses, this is the best Christmas I've ever had, and I have you to thank for it. Shelby responds, I should be thanking you. And they warmly say goodnight to each other, and Evan heads home. This just in, gentle listeners. Shelby turns down the skyrocket position. I repeat, quack, quack. Shelby turns down the skyrocket position.
You should do it between your finger like this so it sounds more echoey.
This just in, gentle listeners. Shelby turns down the skyrocket position. I repeat, Shelby turns down the skyrocket position.
Thanks for the Why would she? She said that was her dream job.
She's moving away from her community and uprooting her child. Plus, on top of it, now she has the feels for Evan. And he has been turning around his managerial style so that it's actually more, it's way more palatable than it once was. Which was her problem with her workplace in the first place.
I have to, like, I'm curious about the time frame between the two of them also, because he was there when her husband died 2 years ago, mm-hmm. or at least 2 years ago. And so she's been there dealing with it for at least 2 years. And she said she has many times worked over holidays and weekends and, you know, done overtime. So it's, what was the turning point? Because it seems like she's been in the thick of it, in the shit, for a long, long time. And then all of a sudden, right before we meet her, she's like, done. And they're like, they're going to make us work during Christmas. And sounds like she's probably dealt with that before.
She had just promised her child the best Christmas ever to cheer her up. And so it was important that she be available for Christmas. And we all hit our breaking point with things sometimes. And you deal with it and you deal with it and you deal with it. And you're like, I just need to get over this hump. I just need to get over this hump. I just need to get over this. Okay, fuck you. You know? When Shelby gets into the office, she finds a stocking on her desk with her name written in glitter glue on it. She immediately thanks Lorenzo, who gestures towards Evan, saying, it wasn't me. Evan, who is handing out stockings to everyone. Lorenzo is pleasantly surprised about the stockings, notes the practical gifts. I mean, he is Evan, after all. But he appreciates the gesture. Shelby glances over at Evan, who just handed a stocking to Brenda, another employee and is using the stockings as ways to connect with his employees. He says to her, "I'm sure it's a lot with the new baby, so if you need more time off or to flex your schedule, you just let me know and we'll work it out." Brenda nods appreciatively.
Before that comment, I was totally thinking about all the Bored Panda articles that are like, look at the shitty thing this boss gave me instead of a bonus. So I was kind of like putting heaven in that sphere until he's like, Brenda, you got a baby. You need more time off. You go ahead and take it if you need to. I'm like, okay. You're out of that sphere now. But you were drifting into it because I'm sure people would just like having Christmas off more than a stocking full of staplers.
In one of the chat groups that I belong to, today was posted a thing that somebody, like a reposted thing, where somebody was like, I came into work and there was a pizza party. I'm paraphrasing. And I joked, what is this? Like part of our bonus? And the HR person said, you shouldn't talk like that. And then afterwards was like, yes, that is part of your bonus. And she was like, ha, motherfucker. I would prefer the $5, thank you very much. Pizza party. Bonus. Mm. A bit later in Evan's office, his boss man, Scott, calls him and lets him know that the board is going to meet with him. Scott doesn't know what it's about. Shocker. Of all shockers. What? You don't know what it's about? He's too busy playing pickleball. But guesses it's not good news. They want to see him tomorrow at 5 and are flying in from all across the country just to do this. Evan is freaking out. I have plans. They're super important. But Scott tells him that this isn't something that can be rescheduled and that he needs to be there.
Okay, who does this? They're meeting on is it Christmas Eve or is it close to Christmas Eve? Do you know the time frame?
I mean, it's before Christmas, obviously, but it's while school is still in session. So, you know, it's
okay. They're meeting really close to Christmas Eve. And I'm assuming not everybody celebrates the holiday season, but how many people want to fly across the country during the busiest holiday travel time to attend a meeting that's probably going to take a couple of hours to what?
Excuse me. I learned from the movie that you had me watch, Christmas with the Cranks, that the Sunday after Thanksgiving is the busiest holiday travel time. Okay.
No, I'm not denying that. I'm just saying like anything after the Sunday after Thanksgiving is probably pretty shitty too. Like up until New Year's, it's probably a bad time. It's probably not, hey, let's go on vacation, because I'm sure the airports aren't going to be busy at all.
Traveling Christmas Day is pretty good because people already want to be where they're going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a hypothesis that one of his bosses has a lover in the area and is just trying to get travel over on the company dime to spend with their sweetheart. Because it doesn't make any sense.
I think that's an excellent hypothesis. Yes.
Thank you. Because anything else doesn't make any sense. It's the next morning and Shelby is helping Grace get ready for the Christmas dance. She holds Grace's white dress with big puffy shoulders in front of her and says in awe, "You're going to look like a proper princess." And Grace corrects her. "You mean queen," Shelby gasps. "Of course, what was I thinking?" Grace says, "This has been the best Christmas ever. It feels like when Daddy was here." Shelby agrees and they hear bing bong from downstairs. They head to the door and it's the Christmas prince. But the prince is looking pretty upset. He says to Shelby, "I have some bad news." And Shelby sends Grace up to her room to play so she can talk to him in private. They step outside and he explains his predicament and he wants to let Grace know that he can't make it. But Shelby Mama Bears the shit out of the situation. She's super upset and says, "She's not going to understand why you can't make it, so I'll take care of it. You just go and do what you have to do." And she walks swiftly back into the house, leaving a very upset Evan outside. She goes upstairs and lets Grace know that the Christmas prince won't be going to the dance, but Grace isn't having it. "It was one of my wishes, and I know you're too old to believe in magic, but you'll see. He'll be there. He promised." She hands her mom the stuffed bear she was holding and pats her on the shoulder. "Oh, Mom, ye of little faith."
I also really liked that he showed up so that he could talk to Grace directly about the situation. Now, Shelby, mm-hmm. as the parent, decided that that was not the move that she wanted to have happen. But he didn't just, like, disappear or call her and just be like, hey, tell Grace I can't make it. Like, he showed up so that he could actually have that conversation. And I was like, good man.
Yeah, so now it's going to be even more fucked up if he can't show up that night. And then little Grace is going to be like, why didn't he show up? Well, he probably would have told you himself, honey, but I sent him away.
I think that Shelby should have had let Evan talk to her, but, you know, that was not my parenting decision. So there you go. That evening, Grace waits by the window for the Christmas prince to come, but he doesn't. Shelby lets her know that the Christmas prince isn't coming to bring them to the dance, but they still can have fun without him. Grace sadly assents to this, but she doesn't like it. They go to the dance, and Grace and Jesse gravitate to each other, telling each other they both look pretty in their dresses. Shelby and Nicole talk to each other nearby, keeping an eye on the girls, when Sherman approaches Grace and Jesse. He snidely remarks, I don't see the Christmas prince here. It's probably because he isn't real. Grace responds, he is real. He just hasn't gotten here yet. Shelby sees Sherman being a dick and tries to guide Grace away from him, but Grace runs off upset. Shelby follows her, apologizing to Grace. I'm sorry the Christmas prince isn't here. Grace looks up at her mom, her eyes brimming with tears. I'm not sad about that, Mom. I'm upset you don't believe. I know he'll be here, and he's kind, smart, funny, and a really good storyteller. That's how I know he's the Christmas prince. I hope that one day you'll believe, too. Shelby looks at her daughter with hearts in her eyes and says, how did my daughter get so smart? Grace smiles proudly back at her mom. Back at work, Evan meets with the board. He's looking good in his beautiful blue suit. He sits at the meeting room table with the rest of the board, and long story short, the board is impressed that his management style has improved so much since he's been warned, and now he's being given a huge promotion. Evan is happy that, one, he's not getting fired, and two, yay, promotion, but three, sorry, board, gotta go. He has a previous engagement, and he gets the fuck out of there.
So you don't think the board would tell his boss, Scott, that it's a good meeting, not a bad meeting? We're just not going to tell you anything, Scott. You don't need to know you're out of the loop. It's not important. You're only his boss. Shh, secrets.
I don't know. Scott seemed out of it just period about everything, so.
No, wouldn't it be funny if Scott doesn't even work there? This whole time, Evan thought he was his boss, and he actually wasn't. That's why he was so clueless. He just doesn't have any place to be during the day, and he likes their coffee.
He's a random guy that, like, came in off of the street and every once in a while reads, like, business reports and stuff like that, and he saw the trend and a small article in the paper that said, whatever the place, the business name place is, floundering, management losing employees due to overwork. And he's like, oh, okay. I know what I need to say. Yeah.
I don't have anything to fill my Tuesdays. I think I'll go see if I can help. So he does. And then for the last 7 years, he's been acting as Evan's boss. And well, that's probably why the first two rockets failed and crashed into the earth. Because he wasn't a rocket engineer.
Tamara, we all know not to let Scott do the calculations. It doesn't work, okay?
Well, yeah. When he says he doesn't know, we should probably just believe him. At the dance, Grace is back with her friend Jesse, and Nicole is getting them hot chocolates. And Grace is wearing a very long, light cream-colored satin gown, and hot someone chocolates? Gives her a very full mug Hello? Of hot cocoa. Drink!
Shot,
yeah. And I give it 2 minutes before that little girl spills her beverage all over the front of her dress. However, Grace keeps looking around for the Christmas prince. Meanwhile, Shelby's out in front of the school. She calls Evan on the phone and confesses to him, I was afraid for so long, so I insulated Grace and I from so much so that we wouldn't get hurt, but I don't want to do that anymore. It's not just Grace that loves you. The same thing is happening to me. Shelby then hears a voice behind her. Turn around. She turns, and it's Evan, and he's dressed like fucking Prince Charming. And Shelby's dress is Cinderella blue. And behind him is a goddamn horse and carriage. He's embodying the Christmas prince from the H to the T. And before Shelby has a chance to tearfully run up to him and kiss the shit out of him, Grace, Jesse, Sherman, and Nicole come outside. And I'm guessing because Grace wanted to check on her mom. Jesse's her friend, and Sherman is a shithead who is looking for another opportunity to make her feel bad. However, Grace gets to excitedly run up to the Christmas prince, who has a lot of helpers along with him, such as Snowball pulling his carriage, and Lorenzo and Annalise. Annalise hands Evan a crown for Grace, and the Christmas prince bows in front of her, extending the crown towards the little girl, saying, "Your Majesty." And Tamara said, "Oh, thank God. I thought he was going to give Shelby a crown." Lorenzo accompanies the newly crowned Grace to the carriage. Sherman has completely changed his tune. He's telling Grace that she looks pretty and waving at the Christmas prince. Jesse cuts her eyes at Sherman and says, "Told you." And Sherman responds, "I was just kidding. I knew he was real all along." Both Evan and Shelby head to the carriage. And once they're seated and the carriage is rolling, Evan presents a beautiful tiara to Shelby, and Tamara says, "Oh shit, never mind." Shelby happily dons it, and Grace asks, "Does that mean you're the Christmas princess?" Shelby responds, "Like my group says, one thing at a time." And Tamara says, "Wait, so Grace is the Christmas queen and her mom's the Christmas princess? How does that work logistically?" But we never find out, because Evan must have rehearsed or something with his sister, because he's smooth as hell and says, "Well, perhaps we can start with this," and leans forward to kiss Shelby, who covers Grace's eyes, and then gamely leans forward, giving him a really sweet, dry kiss. The end! Ah.
Yay!
And the crowd goes wild as they drive off in their horse-drawn carriage. Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give this movie?
I give this movie 4 dry kisses.
Oh.
I know. It's high for a Hallmark. I think it's better than the average Hallmark movie, though. And it's certainly better than The Christmas Cottage, which was on the top 10 list. So.
Lies. They're all lies.
I liked that they had a non-neurotypical romantic interest in Evan. I thought that Tamara did a great job throughout the movie, as did the little girl who played her daughter, did a fantastic job. And I felt like it was really, it had a nice amount of Christmas whimsy and magic in it, but it also like had an actual character growth arc on multiple fronts. I would say the person who may have grown the least is Sherman, but he's 7. He still has, you know, a chance. He just needs to be called out on his bullshit. So
fuck you, Sherman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, no, I thoroughly am delighted by this movie. I think it's a really strong Hallmark movie, and I give it 4 dry kisses. How many kisses do you give it, Tamara?
I'm going to agree that it's better than your average Hallmark movie. I still had some problems with it.
It's perfect. So I don't know what you're talking about. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, let me just shut right up then, because whatever my rating is, it's going to be wrong. I want to say like, I'm like 3.5 dry kisses, because it is better than the Hallmark movie. It's just the premise is so far-fetched. The boss that I hate that has no charisma or cares little about his employees is going to take away weeks from his life to come play Christmas Prince to my daughter. It's just it's a little too far out of the Hallmark scope of me to be like, okay, I'll buy it. I'm just like, And then for the chemistry between him, I know you said he was something typical.
I said that he wasn't neurotypical.
So he may well not be neurotypical, which is fine. But I just didn't buy their relationship on either end. Either his, which might be because of the, you know, neurotypical aspects that he has, if he is. But then there's also Shelby, who just, oh yeah, I love him. And it's just, she says she loves him and she starts having feelings for him, but I just don't feel it. And so maybe it's because they didn't have chemistry that I noticed too much, but I wish there was a little bit more between them that I just didn't feel. But I did love Grace. Love that little girl. She was amazing. She did awesome. High up on the child actress list. Hopefully her parents aren't crazy.
Yeah.
But all of that said, It was enjoyable. It was sweet. It was cute. It had real snow. It was diverse. So I'm going to give it 3.5 dry kisses.
Ah, that sounds lovely. I have dated Evans, you know. I'm like, so I see how it all plays out. And I'm like, yeah, I totally get that. And I have helped Evans to actualize into like a little bit more flexible, sparkly beans. So, you know, like,
I would believe your love story. I would not believe his and Shelby's love story, because I can see you doing that, Shelby. I'm like, you love him now? Oh, okay, sure. All right.
So, you know, Tamara and I were just never going to talk again, but it's fine. No, I'm just kidding. No,
it was a good run while it lasted.
3.5 dry kisses, I think it's totally a fair rating. And I felt the love story, but like, I get why you wouldn't. And you're just not as sophisticated as me. It's fine.
No, I want a little more heat. It has nothing to do with sophistication.
I just kidding.
I want some more ass grabby. I want some more, let me pull your face. No, I don't like the pulling the face. I want some more, like, more than just mwah. At the end, I won't.
Which, there are a few Hallmark movies where you can get juicier dry kisses. Yes.
Mm. Okay.
Than this one. But so now
this is a very dry kiss. I want to say that this is on par to be one of the driest kisses. There's bad dry kisses and there's just dry kisses. And this was on the dry kiss spectrum.
It was on the dry kiss spectrum. I wouldn't call it a bad dry kiss, though. Oh, I've seen some.
Oh, no. I didn't say that. I'm saying it's not a bad dry. But the bad dry kiss is when the camera pans away and they're like, oh, my God, their lips are about to touch. Let's go. Cue. Back of the head. Go to the back of the head. Nobody wants to see this.
Nobody wants to see this.
Abort. Abort. Yeah. Abort.
No. It was a good dry kiss, but it was a simple dry kiss. Absolutely. So, with that being said, Ms. Tamara, what do we have coming up next week?
I was waffling between two movies because I'm going to cheat a little bit and do a movie that has Christmas in it but is not Christmas-centric.
Uh-huh.
And the two movies I was waffling between was Steel Magnolias and Bridget Jones' Diary. But I think it's a sign that Shelby is in this movie and there is a Shelby in Steel Magnolias. So okay. I'm going to do Steel Magnolias next.
Excellent. I've never seen it. It's a drama that'll make you cry. I know this, and it has some Christmas in it. So there you go.
Oh, I'm so sorry you've never seen it before.
No, but I know some things about it.
Most of the main girls have love interests throughout the movie, but they're not like the predominant storyline.
Yeah.
It's mostly their relationship and their love for each other.
Which I love some good friendship love, honestly. So I'm down for friendship romance, and I mean that in the non like sexual kind of way. Yes. So I am looking forward to seeing Steel Magnolias for the first time. I've managed to avoid this highly emotional movie for a very long time, and I am happy to dive into it. It has a stellar cast. Julia Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Is Dolly Parton in it? No.
Yes.
No, Dolly Parton's in it. Fucking
Sally Field. Julia Roberts, Olympia Dukakis.
Oh, Olympia Dukakis, yes.
What's her name? Fucking Splash.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Me too.
Daryl Hannah.
Yes, I knew it was Daryl Hannah. And it probably by far has one of my favorite, very, very moving cinematic moments. One of my favorite, hands down. So I'm excited to get into it.
Fantastic. Oh, so if you have anything you'd like to say about Steel Magnolias, The Christmas Prince, whether you found their love to be believable or not, or you're just trusting us because you don't want to watch a stinking Hallmark movie, but you like hearing us talking about it, totally fair. You can write us at onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter X, or Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And as always, if you find the time to rate and review us, we'd appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one
dry kiss. See you next time.
See you next time.
Ah, Melody.
Hold on. She pulled out my hair earplug. Okay, go lay down. Go, shoot, go over there. Go it. No more head scratches.
Yeah, just like that. Talk dirty to me.
If you didn't find me sexy before, God damn it, you better now.